What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stonehard Sports. On this episode, we are going to be giving our reactions to March Madness, and I'm going to give my predictions for the upcoming Final Four. And then we are also going to go over some free agency grades. I'm going to give out free agency grades for every single NFL team. And then obviously after this, we're going to have some more mock drafts that are going to be coming out. I have already actually done a few. If you don't know, I have a YouTube channel where I'm uploading YouTube exclusive content. This episode is going to be strictly on the podcast, so it won't be on YouTube, but be sure to check out my Instagram. I'll show when I'm posting on YouTube or posting on my just straight up podcast. And I've done a few episodes with my good friend Mathis, who has been on the podcast before. I've done some stuff for his channel. His channel is Mathis NFL on YouTube. Go check it out if you want. We've done some mock drafts there, and they've gotten a few thousand views. I've done two of them. So go ahead and check those out, and then I'll have more stuff on my YouTube specific as well. And he might come on here and do our annual quarterback rankings that we normally do. So that should all be good. But enough of that. I don't want to go too much into the future. So let's keep it to the present. And today we are just going to go over the two things that I had mentioned. First, starting off with the March Madness 2024 reactions. So in terms of this year, obviously I'm excited for every single year, but in terms of this year specifically, I would say that it wasn't like it was disappointing. I just said there maybe weren't as many upsets as normal. You know, at least what we've come to expect in the transfer era. You know, NIL is just kind of getting off the ground, but kind of like pre-COVID, we had a ton of crazy upsets and stuff. And last year's was almost just far from the norm. Like, it was kind of overdoing it in terms of just crazy stuff. So I think it was realistic to expect us to come back down to earth a bit. And with, you know, once we got past the first and second weekend, we were like, oh, there's only like one real quote unquote Cinderella team here with a few other like surprising ones. Then we started getting through the weeds and getting, you know, actual different teams to make it, which that is the Final Four, and we'll preview that. But just some initial reactions. I think definitely some still great storylines. The SEC, some pretty big failures from them, especially Auburn and Kentucky. Auburn was a analytical darling. They had done very well, at least through their season. They obviously won the SEC, but they also were a four seed that was projected to go pretty far. Obviously, it would have been hard for them to even get close to beating UConn, but they were a team that were like, you know, hey, if they match up against UConn, they could give them, you know, a hard time. And they didn't even get to it because they lost to Yale in the first round, which a few people did pick that I saw. I thought about it, but I never ended up doing it. So shout out to those people that predicted that. So Yale ended up destroying Auburn. Not destroying, but destroying their hopes of getting far in the tournament, which that's another year of an Ivy League school going and winning a first round game as a lower seed. And then we had Kentucky, which was a pick of mine to go very far, and their path to the Final Four or the Elite Eight looked pretty good. I mean, you know, obviously in the second round, they would have had run into NC State, which who knows who would have won that game potentially. Just because a team loses one doesn't mean they're guaranteed to lose another. You know, that's not really how sports isn't that streamlined, at least, you know, especially March Madness. One thing could change everything. Kind of like how we bring up last year, like, what if FAU had to play Purdue instead of FDU? Like, who knows if FAU would have been on that big run? But everything happens for a reason, and it did. But, I mean, Kentucky, if they won that game, they had a pretty solid path to the Elite Eight and maybe the Final Four, because I was not really a huge fan of Marquette as a two seed, and then Houston obviously was very good, but they had their, you know, downsides, especially offensively. And they lost in the first round, obviously, to March Madness legend Jack Golke, who hit 10 threes in the game, dominated. And even with, I mean, Kentucky was still in that game the entire time, and they had so many chances to win it. And I think, obviously, you know, Calipari's job was being put into question. I don't think he should have been fired, but I definitely think, which he wasn't fired, I'm saying I don't think in a perfect world that yes, he should have been fired, but I think there definitely are valid conversations about his job because he's tried a lot of different stuff and it hasn't worked. Like the year that they lost to St. Peter's, that wasn't a purely rookie or like that wasn't a purely freshman team. That was led by Oscar Tshiebwe, who was a big, you know, a star senior big. This year, they get a ton of, they get, you know, two young guards, but they also have two veteran guards that are leading the way, and they still fail. And obviously, before that, he had gone the one-and-done route for, like, almost his whole team, and it didn't work either. And there had been another year before where he had a good amount of transfers that came in, and that didn't work. So the problem is that he's tried a lot of different stuff, and he's lost, like, every single one, you know? And obviously, you get unlucky, but it's becoming pattern recognition at this point. And I think he's definitely going to need to look and realize like, hey, getting these one and dones is not really directly correlating to wins. Like this isn't 2012-11 anymore. You know, like we don't have this, hey, get Anthony Davis, get John Wall, get all the best Boogie Cousins, get all these best young guys, Devin Booker, just go out there and be the most talented players and dominate. Experience is ruling the day, and having experienced guys that know what to do in crucial situations helps a ton, and it clearly showed in this game for Kentucky. So that was probably the biggest upset, especially in the first round. You also had James Madison and Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon, who against St. Mary's, I also thought, hey, they have a very low floor, which they did, or a very high floor. And they did. They were like, hey, they beat up on teams that were worse than them. It's just if they played a UNC, like, how would it go? And Grand Canyon just looked taller and bigger and faster than them. And they won that game. Also, St. Mary's, their best player, Aiden Mahaney, shot horrendously. And then James Madison, who I did end up picking to beat Wisconsin, which some people had Wisconsin because they made the Big Ten title game. I thought it was kind of lightning in a bottle. But JMU proved to be the better team there. Clemson going far despite being underdogs in round one, which I definitely didn't pick Clemson to go far. And who knows, maybe if New Mexico played a different team, they could have gone farther as well. But they just happened to run into Clemson, who, you know, ended up going to the Elite Eight, which I definitely was not thinking that Clemson would be the team to do it. I thought it was New Mexico, but I did agree with the idea that Arizona and Baylor and UNC would not end up going to the Elite Eight. I know that a lot of people wanted to see the UNC-Arizona matchup. I didn't think it would happen. It's just I didn't pick the correct teams for it to happen. So that's kind of an interesting thing there. But yeah, Clemson was a big surprise. The Mountain West Conference, pretty big disappointment. They had a ton of hype. I bought into some of it, not all of it, but some of it, and even some of it didn't really fully pan out. Colorado, you know, I think they definitely could have had a chance to go on a run and beat Marquette, but that didn't happen. New Mexico obviously failed. Utah State did win a game, and San Diego State also, you know, they both won a game or two, but just not really producing what we thought. And that's why they're getting these lower seeds, even if they have good seasons. And I think unless someone breaks through fully, you know, and not just one team like San Diego State, I think they need more teams. They might just end up being lower seeded for, you know, a long time whenever they have good teams around. And then the ACC proving to be very good. I still don't think Virginia should have been in the field, but I mean, Clemson, Duke, UNC, and obviously the biggest darling of the tournament, NC State, making these runs and proving the ACC was better than a lot of people thought. And that's where we finish it off with NC State, because if you don't know, that's currently where I attend. I attend NC State, and it has been just it's almost hard to explain. Like, I covered this team because I do a lot of coverage stuff for NC State. I covered this team, football and basketball. I've been trying to get into all the stuff, and for basketball specifically, I went to every single home game. As media, I covered like two or three separate games. I've been in the locker room. I've talked to all these players a good amount. I've talked to Kevin Keats. I've met all these players. And just, it's really exciting, and it almost feels surreal for them to be doing something that almost no other team has done. I mean, obviously the 5 wins in 5 days to even make the tournament. They get an 11 seed. And does stuff have to go right for them and Lucky? Yeah, obviously. I think that is the case for a lot of teams. Like they didn't have to play Kentucky in the second round. And obviously Marquette, I wasn't a big fan of, but Marquette shot historically bad. I mean, I think I saw a stat where teams that had shot 30 total three-pointers in a game or more, that had happened like 1,330 times in the season, like this current season, where just in any sort of game where one team shoots 30 threes or more, and Marquette had the second worst percentage in that game against NC State. Out of 1,300 times in a season where a team shot over 30 threes, Marquette had the second worst percentage at around 13%. And part of it was NC State's defense, but there were a ton of open threes if you watch that game that Marquette just did not hit. So obviously, you know, partly get a little lucky there, but also not having to play Houston. I think Houston would have been not a great matchup for them because Houston is just strikingly difficult to deal with defensively. And unfortunately, they lose their best player, Jamal Shedd, in against Duke. He gets injured, I believe twists his ankle or something like that, doesn't come back from the game, and Duke ends up winning by three in a low-scoring matchup. And then NC State plays Duke, and they obviously still had a chance to lose that game, and they come back after a deficit. I can't remember if they were down double digits at any point, I believe sometime in the second half. And I think they scored like 32 points in the first half, and in the second half had like 55, and ended up winning it and going to the Final Four. And it was just insane. It was insane. Yesterday, they had come back from the trip. Obviously, at NC State, if you don't know, there's, for a lot of places, I'm sure there's like these places that everyone goes when your team wins something. And for NC State, it's like this big bell tower, and they end up lighting it red, and everyone goes there. And there were so many people, because not only men's that made the Final Four, the women's team also made the Final Four as a three seed. And so yesterday, last night, I had gone out and they had locations where the teams were going to come back. So I went to go, you know, welcome the team back, the men's team, and had a huge celebration with them. They were all just jumping, and it was like this big mosh pit. It was crazy. You could talk to players and everything, which I had done before when they won the ACC as well. I went to go, you know, just see them when they came back and had conversations with a few of them. Like, you know, obviously DJ Burns is the darling of the tournament, but DJ Horn, Muhammad Diarra, Ben Middlebrooks, Aiden O'Connell, one of my favorite guys there. I had a few conversations with him. He's a great guy. He's the one that hit the insane shot against Virginia to even have all of this happen in the first place, which is crazy to think about, that if Virginia just makes one free throw in the five free throws that they ended up missing down the stretch against NC State in the ACC tournament, and if Michael O'Connell doesn't hit a crazy off-the-backboard spinning three-times shot, none of this would have happened. So it's really weird to think about that. But it's just been awesome, an awesome experience. And after I saw the men, I went to go see the women. They came in literally like 30 minutes after, so we went there, and they're all holding the trophy, and it's just awesome. It's awesome. I don't know if any of them will win the title or even win another game, but even if they don't, this is still one of the biggest accomplishments and one of the best months for NC State in terms of sports in general. So that's been really cool to experience. But let's go over my predictions for the current Final Four. Last year, we got everything right, so that's pretty good. So we'll see if we can do that this year. And it unfortunately feels like an inevitable matchup is coming between two teams that have just kind of been the best. First, starting with UConn, Bama, is it like last year where UConn was demolishing other teams and they didn't have a chance? No, I don't think that's necessarily the case. There is absolutely a game plan for Alabama if they can just outshoot their way to a win. That's kind of what it needs to be. Obviously, they're going to need to hit, you know, their shots at a phenomenal rate, which they have done before at times, because they're not going to really defend. They're going to have to hit their shots. And obviously, UConn's not a bad defensive team, so they're going to have to overcome that. I just don't really see it happening, but there is a game plan in place. And then as much as I want to pick NC State, and, you know, it's obviously I didn't have them going this far because I didn't think they'd play the teams that they ended up playing. It just really worked out for them. Purdue has really impressed, and they have definitely looked like the team that they were in the regular season and analytically throughout the season. You know, Burns versus Edie is just what the human race has literally built up to. Like, this matchup's going to be insane. I know a ton of people that have been wanting it and are super excited for it, and I know I can't wait to see it. Just the two most polarizing guys, one of them in polarizing in terms of, like, you either love him or you absolutely despise him. And DJ Burns, where he's like the darling of the tournament and has gotten so much popularity, and it's awesome for him because he's such a cool guy and a good dude. And it's just going to be, the storyline is the best of the tournament. It's just insane, which is just crazy to think that I even go to that school to where all eyes are on you. Like, the entire United States with March Madness is all focused in and rooting for NC State. But in terms of the matchup, State can play at different tempos. They've done it before to match the opponent and try and just outduel them. They do have three big men that are going to try and diminish or at least minimize Edie's impact. That's Ben Middlebrooks, Muhammad Diarra, who's been playing phenomenally, all going through Ramadan as well. And then obviously DJ Burns. Which, you know, Edie is going to get his, so you're going to have to try and slightly limit it. Maybe there are definitely a few good fouls, you could say. I know a lot of people hate Edie because the way he plays, which, you know, I would consider myself unbiased and educated in terms of watching all this stuff. And I think, not to offend people, but the majority of people who just absolutely despise Edie and everything that he does have some sort of bias towards that because they just don't enjoy his style of play. He's extremely dominant, and there might be one call or two where it's like, okay, they should have been called on him. But he doesn't get fouls because he doesn't aggressively try to go play defense because he doesn't need to. He's super tall, so it's very smart, actually. He just stands up. He doesn't try and push you or, like, have any sort of external force that would potentially cause a foul. Obviously, it happens occasionally, but that's why he doesn't really pick up fouls. It's not because the refs are totally biased. He just doesn't really extend and need to go out of his way to get one. And just go ahead and watch him on any sort of offensive possession. Guys are all over him all the time because that's all they can do, hardly, unless they're relatively strong and tall, kind of similar to him, and make him, you know, take longer shots. It's really hard to beat. And partly a team that does foul smartly is good because he's not obviously 100% free throw shooter. He's around 70, which is good for a big man, but that's, you know, still not a gimme. Like, there might be games where he shoots less than 70. So I think with State, they have a good rotation of bigs. If they could at least play relatively solid, not let him get 40 points, you know, and have smart fouls, not just dumb fouls, because they're going to need to make sure if they foul, it's because of Edie taking a wide open shot, not because of some sort of other dumb play that, you know, messed it up and now their big men have more fouls and Edie just goes to eat. Like, if they're going to foul, it's got to be smart and it's got to be because of Zach Edie. But, you know, that is definitely a strategy there, but they're also going to have to play good perimeter defense, and other guys are going to have to make their shots. They're just going to have to. It cannot be just DJ Burns, which is obviously going to be a tough matchup against Edie, and then DJ Horn, who's been very good, had a streaky first half, but other guys are going to need to step up and make their shots and make plays, and it's going to need to be contributions from everyone if they want to win this game, because, you know, it just cannot just be DJ Burns and DJ Horn, because last time it was Burns pretty much dominating the mismatch versus Duke, and there's not really a mismatch versus Edie, so other role players are going to need to step up. And I do think NC State has a better chance to win this game versus Purdue than Bama does versus UConn. But unfortunately, State, obviously, you know, even historically, they do have the most losses to ever make a Final Four, and anyone who's historically close to them has either lost in the Final Four, and I think one of them had made the title game and they lost. So I will begrudgingly go Purdue here, and then Purdue versus UConn. the clear first and second best team that, you know, we've kind of, at least I've definitely thought through the entire year. I think it's going to be a combination of like a chess match versus pure skill versus just brute dominance all in one game. It's going to be very, very good. But I just have to go with the team that I trust more, and that's UConn. UConn is super athletic. They can defend the three. They control the game in almost every way, especially with their tempo almost all the time. Purdue could totally win, obviously, if they shoot well. But, you know, Edie doesn't really want to foul out, obviously, and I think Donovan Klingon is going to take advantage of that. And with Purdue having less depth than UConn, it's not by a ton, but they do have less depth. You know, it's not a clear choice by any means, but I would definitely say give me the safer team, in at least in my opinion, and I'll take UConn 76-70. Now let's get to the NFL free agency grades. Just for reference, there are still a good amount of free agents still available. Obviously, they all have their questions. That's why they're available, but still potential quality pieces that could help to a team trying to win right now, like Stephon Gilmore at corner, tackle Mekhi Becton, who's still 25 years old. He's obviously had a ton of injury history, and maybe you don't want to sign him as just a guy on your tackle spot with no depth behind him. I think he could be extremely good rotationally because he's very, very talented. Dalton Reisner at guard, Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. He wouldn't start in and start, but he might still be good to have on your roster. Odell Beckham Jr. and Tyler Boyd at wide receiver. Calais Campbell at edge. He's older, but not necessarily saying he would produce like Von Miller, but like the idea of getting a Von Miller on your team, still very good at this age. Michael Thomas at wide receiver, and then J.K. Dobbins at halfback. There's still a few more, but there's a few notable guys that are still available. And we're going to go in alphabetical order through each team. Some will be more in-depth than others, because obviously some made more moves than others, but I've got just a baseline grade on every single one. Again, this is for free agency only. The draft will come soon, and then we'll do a, you know, full encompassing just off-season grade, and that's when we get into the, you know, predictions for next season. All right, let's start with the Arizona Cardinals. They made a lot of moves, but nothing really groundbreaking. Guys like Bilal Nichols, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jonah Williams at tackle, Desmond Ridder via trade. They got rid of Rondell Moore, lost Marquise Brown, DJ Humphreys at tackle. Just not a ton going on. They still have a lot of cap space left, but nothing that really jumps off the page for me. And the money they paid to these guys aren't bad, but they're just a little bit more than what they're worth, obviously because they're the Cardinals and they need people on the team. This isn't really where they're going to be focusing on. They're mainly going to be focusing on development in the draft. So I'm going to give them a C, but probably more so C minus if you're looking based on who they got, but this isn't really where the Cardinals are trying to do. Atlanta Falcons, I'm going to give them an A minus. They ended up bringing in Kirk Cousins, yes, on a big deal. Once again, 4 years, $180 million with $100 million guaranteed. But that is kind of just the quarterback market at this point, and I am someone who does really like Kirk Cousins, and before he got injured this year, was playing phenomenally. The Vikings record was not great, but it wasn't really because of him. They had lost a lot of close games, and a lot of it was on partial just mess-ups by the defense, or obviously, if you don't remember, the Justin Jefferson game where he reached out at the end zone and fumbled and gave the ball back to the other team. That was a loss right there, but he was playing very well before that, and I think a Falcons team that has a new identity, they have a new coach, they have all these weapons that they've used first-round picks on, they just need to take advantage of them, and they need someone that can actually use them properly, and I think that is Kirk Cousins, and I think while the contract maybe isn't indicative of his, you know, general talent, I think it's also you're taking into account, hey, this guy is going to use all of this capital that we used on these good offensive players and make the most out of them to make them elevate their own game. So that's kind of ideally what you're thinking there. And then we have, you know, a few wide receivers that they signed like Darnell Mooney, Rondale Moore. Darnell Mooney was kind of a big deal, but they did need more receiver depth because the receiver they had behind Drake London was not very good. So that's basically what they ended up doing. And I, you know, don't hate it, but It is just a little bit of money, but they did need some wide receiver. The guys they lost wasn't really a big deal. Jeff Okuda, Jonu Smith, Matt Hennessy, Matt Collins, obviously got rid of Desmond Ridder. So I think overall, just with the idea of getting Kirk and having some wide receiver depth, I'm going to give them an A minus for this free agency. Baltimore Ravens, I'm going to give them a B minus. They really added only one significant player, that's Derrick Henry, on a 2-year, $16 million deal, which is obviously good value for him, but he is older. And I do think, though, at least just the idea of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson together looks pretty enticing and dominant. But it's not like, you know, obviously some insane franchise running back you're getting for a few years. Like, this is a win now move. They did keep a few key pieces on the D-line. Justin Madubuike on a 4-year, $100 million deal. I think that's relatively around where he is, probably a little bit higher, but, you know, it's a guy who just broke out this year, and I don't think you could afford to lose him. But they did lose a good amount of people, like Geno Stone, Gus Edwards, Patrick Queen as the main one, a few other guys, Kevin Zeitler, Tyus Bowser, John Simpson on the O-line. So, lost a few starters and depth pieces. They do have, obviously, guys that they could bring up and take their position. So I don't think this is, like, insane loss for them. But there are a few guys that they maybe could have brought back that they didn't end up losing for, you know, financial purposes. So we'll give them a B minus. Buffalo Bills, I'm going to give them a C plus. They obviously, as we know, did lose a lot of people like Gabe Davis, Mitch Morris at center, Jordan Poyer at safety, a few other secondary guys and guys on the defense like Leonard Floyd, Nyheim Hines at halfback, but he didn't really obviously produce last year at all. They did re-sign, though, a ton of guys, and none of them to overwhelming contracts. So Deion Dawkins got re-signed at tackle, and I think it was a good signing for them. Taylor Rapp got re-signed at safety, and that was solid. They had guys like Teron Johnson at corner, DaQuan Jones at tackle, defensive tackle, and then A.J. Epineza at defensive end. Both A.J. Epineza actually was a great deal, 2-year, $12 million. I think that's very good. But none of them were like overwhelmingly, you know, like, oh, this is an overpay. And in free agency, they didn't go crazy. They brought in Mike Edwards at safety to, you know, have a cheap replacement to Jordan Poyer, which saved them money. Obviously, Mitch Trubisky was like, okay, whatever, it's a backup. But they also did get Curtis Samuel and Matt Collins, who I think are quality wide receivers, to make up for the loss of Gabe Davis. And I don't think they should have paid Gabe Davis what Jacksonville paid him. So I really don't think this is as bad as people are saying. I think they re-signed important guys. Guys they lost either weren't vital to the team or were getting paid way more elsewhere. So I think that's not really a bad situation for them. And yes, the team is obviously not as stacked as it was, but I think it does give more chances for maybe guys they've drafted to step up, and we'll see if that is the case or not. So we're still going to give them a C plus, but it's not anything terrible. The Carolina Panthers, they made a crap load of moves, and I think they were all on the spectrum, some of them being like, really? And other ones being like, oh, wow, like this is actually a great move. They had some of the most roster turnover out of any team. They focused on bringing in a lot of guys, obviously, on the offensive line, and they did get some receivers, got a few guys to try and replace the people they lost, specifically on defense. Some of the most notable names: Frankie Louvu, who I did really want to bring back, but he ended up going to Washington. Jeremy Chinn, Dante Jackson, Von Bell, Hayden Hurst on offense, CJ Henderson at corner, Bradley Bozeman at center. So they did lose a lot of guys, and the ones they brought in, did they overpay for? Yes. Guys like Robert Hunt, who got a ton of money at guard. Damian Lewis got a ton of money at guard. A'shaun Robinson on the D-line, more money than I would have liked. Josie Jewell, though, solid. A few other guys that had brought in, like Jadeveon Clowney most recently, 2-year, $20 million, to try and replace the biggest loss, which was Brian Burns. DJ Wonnum at defensive end. Jordan Fuller at safety, I thought was solid. Probably my favorite one was bringing in Deontay Johnson at wide receiver. They traded for him. They traded Dante Jackson in a 6th-round pick. I think that's good. And I think the biggest move, obviously, that everyone looks at is the Brian Burns trade. Now, he got traded to the New York Giants for a second-round pick this year, number 39, and then a 2025 5th-round pick. Now, is it a great trade for the Panthers knowing what the Rams offered like last year or 2 years ago, which was 2 first-round picks? No, it's not. But I think you need to look at it in a vacuum in terms of what it means, like, for this current team. And that is because this is a new GM. So the old GM, like, it's not like it's the same GM that accepted this deal. Like, it's an old GM. The new GM here obviously is like, hey, look, this is our team last year. It was very bad. We have a rookie quarterback. What's the biggest thing we need to do? Make sure this rookie quarterback is healthy and has actual help. And I know a lot of people don't like that they lost a lot of these defensive players, but how many wins did they contribute? Two. And it was a solid defense, but clearly it didn't move the needle enough to where it was like, hey, you got like 6-7 wins. If your offense was better, boom, you're like a clear playoff team. That wasn't the case. And Brian Burns obviously is young and is looked at very highly and, you know, obviously did get more looks on the defense because he was one of the better pass rushers, so he had more attention. His double team rate was still not as high as you would think. It was even lower than Jadeveon Clowney, and Jadeveon Clowney had more production than Brian Burns last year. And, you know, I think a second and a fifth for him, it's not bad. It really isn't, especially when you think that, hey, Brian Burns is going to have to be paid, and the Giants ended up paying him very handsomely and probably a relative overpay, to be honest, which pass rusher is very important, and he's young, so it's not a terrible overpay. But for what the Panthers team, like, just needs right now, I think it was smart to potentially say, hey, I know we need to lose Brian Burns, but let's get this high second round pick, pair it with another, obviously the first pick in the second round. They don't have their first round pick clearly. And all the offense and just all the entire offseason needs to be focused on helping Bryce Young, because that's where your entire, you know, future is invested in. And whether people agree with that or not, that's the choice. And I think it has to be the right choice. And we'll see how it plays out for them. But with all the moves they made and all the people they lost, it's a huge roster turnover. I do like some of them. So we're going to keep it relatively right in the middle and give them a B-. Chicago Bears, also relatively polarizing offseason. They ended up adding guys like DeAndre Swift to kind of more money than I would think, 3-year, $24 million. But they also got Kevin Byard, who's older but good, Gerald Everett as a backup tight end, guys like Keenan Allen they ended up trading for a fourth-round pick. I think that was a good trade, even if he is older. They kept Jalen Johnson at corner, which is very needed for them, 4-year, $76 million. They did lose guys that are big names, but I don't think they were necessarily needed, and they didn't perform well last year. Like Cody Whitehair and Eddie Jackson didn't do too well. Darnell Mooney got a ton of money from Atlanta. I don't think it was worth, you know, paying him that, and boom, you just replaced him with Keenan Allen, so that's pretty great. Deontay Foreman lost, but wasn't a huge loss. Obviously, Justin Fields they did trade for, which I think they would get more, but I was not someone who was just completely blinded or in some sort of Justin Fields camp of like, no, he's amazing. Like they need this and this for him. Like I was pretty realistic with what Justin Fields had played like and what he was worth. Did I think it was more than a sixth that conveys to a fourth round pick? Yeah, but it's not too far off. So overall, I do think they overpaid a little bit for a few guys here. And, you know, some of the people they lost weren't obviously demanding. But I think overall it's like a B. They still have a lot of cap. They obviously have the draft, which is definitely going to probably help boost their grade. Cause a lot of this is definitely for the future quarterback that they're going to have, but just for free agency alone, I'll give them a B. Cincinnati Bengals, I'm going to also give them a B. They ended up adding guys like Geno Stone from Baltimore, took him within the division. Zach Moss, they ended up giving 2-year $8 million to, and then getting rid of Joe Mixon, which cleared $6 million. Which is honestly kind of an upgrade, to be honest. Like, Zach Moss is younger, you're getting him for less money, and Joe Mixon is probably one of the more overrated running backs, in my opinion, in the NFL. Like, he's solid, but I don't think he's anything groundbreaking, and I don't think it was worth paying him a certain amount of money. They ended up bringing in Sheldon Rankins, 2-year, $25 million, but they did lose DJ Reader, who's a similar age and had literally less money, so that was kind of confusing. Did end up bringing in Von Bell at safety. Trent Brown at tackle at 1 year was a good deal, so kind of ups and downs through the offseason. Not bad. Still going to give him a B for the, or not offseason, but for free agency, going to give him a B. Cleveland Browns also going to give a B. They did trade for Jerry Jeudy, which I wasn't a big fan of. I'm not really a Jerry Jeudy guy. They paid for him and then traded for him. Not a huge fan of it. 3-year, $52 million. But they didn't give up a ton. A fifth and a sixth round pick. Not a big deal. And then they just signed a bunch of like solid guys. Two guys at linebacker, Jordan Hicks and Devin Bush. Nyheim Hines at halfback and Deontay Foreman. And then they brought in Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley. They did re-sign Za'Darius Smith and Maurice Hurst, along with Shelby Harris, which is good. And they didn't lose a ton of important people either, like Sione Takitaki and Anthony Walker. They replaced at linebacker. Joe Flacco I did like. Obviously, it was great there, but, you know, it's not like Jameis Winston, Joe Flacco, like, oh no, they had a huge downgrade. Like, is their backup quarterback, you know? Maybe starter if Watson has a giant collapse this year. But not anything crazy. Didn't love the Jerry Jeudy signing, but, you know, I understand it. They could have used more weapons, so we'll give them a B. Dallas Cowboys, they're going to get a D. They're going to get a D. Just, I mean, they only made one real move. That's bringing in Eric Kendricks at linebacker, 1 year, $3 million. They re-signed Jordan Lewis to a 1 year deal. Lost Tony Pollard, Dante Fowler, Tyron Smith, Tyler Biadasz at center, Dorrance Armstrong. Like, it's they lost a good amount of people, didn't bring a bunch in. They're going to need to really hit on this draft because they are really feeling the effects of a Dak Prescott extension right now. So they're going to get a D. Broncos, I'm going to give them a C. I think part of it just has to be from the Russell Wilson and the fact that he's got a gigantic dead cap hit around like $60 million. That just sucks. And their signings weren't even that bad. Like Brandon Jones at safety, Malcolm Roach at defensive end, all were guys that were backups that didn't get a ton of like playing time, but looked good when they played. So maybe in a, you know, hey, you can be the starter. We'll see what they do. Brandon Jones is a safety. Malcolm Roach is an edge rusher from Miami and New Orleans, respectively. They brought in Josh Reynolds, which is like fine. Cody Barton at linebacker, it's fine. So, you know, nothing crazy, but they did lose like Justin Simmons, Josie Jewell, Lloyd Cushenberry at center for nothing. Just obviously Russell Wilson as well. Just a lot of key contributors that they didn't really get a ton back for. It was more so just, you know, not really even freeing up any money, just actually taking cap hit with Russell Wilson. So they'll get a C. Detroit Lions, they're going to be one of the few A's for their free agency. Definitely ended up addressing some key issues they had, but also I think upgraded at the same time at other positions that they also maybe needed help at. They did end up having to move on from guard Jonah Jackson, who was starting, but he was probably the worst guard, or at least the worst offensive lineman on their current O-line, and he got paid a ton by the Rams, and they didn't need to match it, so that's good. They didn't do that, and then they just went and got Kevin Zeitler, who's older, cheaper, better, fits their timeline, so that's great. Graham Glasgow, who's very good, they re-signed for 3 year, $20 million, phenomenal re-sign. Didn't lose anyone crazy. They did lose C.J. Gardner-Johnson, but he didn't really play much, if at all, for them last year. Tracy Walker at safety, who's like replaceable, and he's fine. And then they brought in guys like Carlton Davis, a trade. They give up a third-round pick for him. I think that's pretty solid. Marcus Davenport from Minnesota, who, you know, has had potential. He hasn't played a ton, but he's not necessarily, like, directly needed to be like, hey, you need to produce. Like, we got Aiden Hutchinson. We got a lot of other guys. Like, you know, just ease your way in and use your talent. And I think if he stays healthy, that would be a pretty good steal there. Amik Robertson from Vegas, that was a solid signing at corner. And then they got DJ Reader from Cincinnati, 2 year, $22 million, to go along with the already, you know, relatively stacked D-line they have right there in, you know, Aleem McNeil, who had a relatively breakout season last year. So, I mean, they upgraded in a lot of positions. They obviously needed corner a lot. They, I think, solidly addressed it, didn't overpay for a ton of guys. They definitely get an A, and I think now that they still have, like, a ton of picks, they could just use the picks to just take the best player on the board, which, you know, the draft class is, you know, deep, especially in the first round, in corner, receiver, and offensive lineman. And it wouldn't hurt to grab one of any of those guys in the first round. So they could do that, whoever just falls to them as the best available, or trade a lot for maybe a star player because they're in win-now mode with, you know, returning their OC and Ben Johnson. So pretty great offseason, or a pretty great free agency for the Lions, and they're in a very good spot. Next is the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to give them a B. Most notably, guys that they added were Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. I do really like the Xavier McKinney deal. I think he's a franchise safety. It's a little much for a safety, $68 million, 4 years, but still good. Josh Jacobs, they gave a four-year, $48 million deal to, which I don't love because I don't think he is necessarily worth that money. And they did end up letting go of Aaron Jones, who, you know, I guess they obviously didn't want to pay that much, but to be honest, I think Aaron Jones has been just more consistent than Josh Jacobs, but the best ability is availability, and Aaron Jones was not necessarily fully available the entire season. He obviously was in the postseason and killed it, but Josh Jacobs has seemingly, you know, been relatively consistent in being able to stay on the field, even if I don't think he's as talented as Aaron Jones, and even if he is, I think he got too much money. But I still relatively understand the deal, and they did also bring back A.J. Dillon. Defensively, they got Corey Ballantyne back, so that's a pretty solid signing there. Keyshawn Nixon, another corner they brought back on a three-year deal. Lost a few other guys like Darnell Savage, but they obviously replaced him with Xavier McKinney. John Runyon on the O-line, David Bakhtiari, but he never really played, so that's understandable. So they're going to still need to address a few positions in the draft, specifically O-line. I think it's pretty solid to say they're going to go O-line in the first round. Just got to hope you hit on it as an NFL Ready Now guy. But Packers, nothing crazy, but their future's still looking bright, obviously. But just for this free agency period, we'll give them a B. Houston Texans, I'm going to give them a B+. Some people had them at like an A+. I still think it's good. I just think some people had their expectations too high, but I also think some people look at their offseason better than what it is. They changed a lot. They did lose a ton of guys. They lost Jonathan Grenard to Minnesota, along with Blake Cashman. Grenard and edge rusher Cashman linebacker both were there, developed, and ended up doing very well in their last season. And some of them, in Grenard, they, you know, saved money by letting go. But Blake Cashman, they, you know, maybe cost them to let him go. Devin Singletary had halfback they lost. Sheldon Rankins, Denzel Perryman, Malik Collins. Some guys are not crazy, but, you know, they replaced him, and some of them got more money, some of them didn't, and I think it is an upgrade, but it's not this overwhelming upgrade that deserves an A. They did get DeNico Autry from Tennessee, two-year, 20 mil, D-line, solid. Azeez Al-Shaair, also from Tennessee, on a three-year, $34 million deal. He has $21 million guaranteed at linebacker. I think that's not bad. That's around where he's worth. Danielle Hunter, who is older, obviously way older than Grenard. They pretty much traded Danielle Hunter for Jonathan Grenard, which fits, you know, I guess the mold of each team. Minnesota trying to take a step back and Houston's trying to take a step forward. So that makes sense there. But other moves are, you know, they're solid. They're not insane. Like Jeff Okuda, CJ Henderson, one-year deals for each. They're not going to move the needle or anything. Tim Settle, Deshaun Phillips at D-line. You know, it's nothing crazy. The biggest one, obviously, is Joe Mixon, which, you know, I think is a solid halfback, but I just don't think he's necessarily worth this crazy amount. He ended up getting a two-year, $20 million extension, with I do think it's too much, but they gave up a seventh to get him. The money's not insane. It's just the value, I think, that you could have had maybe with Singletary on a slightly cheaper deal than Joe Mixon, who, again, I'm not the biggest fan of Joe Mixon, but it's still like a B- move. It's not anything crazy, but it's not bad. They did keep Dalton Schultz and Noah Brown. I do like both of those. And then Derek Barnett, they also are going to finally get to really see a full season of him. So it's an overall upgrade, which is why it's a B+. I just don't think it's necessarily an A. Indianapolis Colts, they're going to get a B just because they mostly just re-signed a bunch of guys. They re-signed Michael Pittman, Kenny Moore, Tyquan Lewis, Zaire Franklin, Grover Stewart on offensive and defensive. A lot of mix in there. Mostly defensive guys they re-signed. The best one, at least in my opinion, I think was bringing back Kenny Moore, who's one of the best, if not the best, slot corners in the NFL on a three-year, $30 million deal. I think that's great. They brought in Raekwon Davis on the D-line, signed Joe Flacco as a backup, you know, lost guys like Gardner Minshew, Zach Moss, Isaiah McKenzie. They basically focused on re-signing a lot of their talent, which they were a borderline playoff team with a backup quarterback the entire year. So hopefully you expect Anthony Richardson to be playing the whole year and get a full year to develop, and you have a lot of players that were on the team when you were a playoff caliber team. And maybe he'll be, I think he'll be better than Gardner Minshew was this year, but Gardner Minshew wasn't bad, and Anthony Richardson was more of a raw prospect coming out, and he didn't get a lot of time, even if he looked good. So tough to say there, but it's a B, nothing crazy, but maybe in the future they might need to make some more, you know, outreaching moves to really try and improve this roster. Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm going to give them a B+. I was actually not really super down, even if a few of the moves were like relatively like, oh, okay. Wide receiver was the biggest one. Wide receiver, they brought in Gabe Davis on a 3-year, $40 million deal, who's a fine receiver. It's a little bit of an overpay, but it's not a huge deal. Devin Duvernay, they also brought in, but they let go of Calvin Ridley. But I don't think it's that big of a deal because Calvin Ridley kind of disappointed this previous season, and the gap between Gabe Davis and Calvin Ridley is honestly not as big as we think. And Calvin Ridley got $50 million guaranteed and had one extra year and was paid $10 million more per year than Gabe Davis was. And he's just not worth $10 million more than Gabe Davis. He's not. So in that view, it's a good move for Jacksonville to move on. They brought in center Mitch Morse from Buffalo. Got in Ronald Darby, Eric Armstead from San Francisco. That's a great move. $43 million, 3-year deal. Very good. Kept Ezra Cleveland, who they traded for. They did lose Darius Williams, Rayshon Jenkins, Kalavon Chaisson. So a few guys they lost, specifically Darius Williams, I think was the biggest one. That was kind of like, oh, you know, maybe you would like to keep him. So they'll need to address some stuff in the draft, but it's overall not that bad. Also got Mac Jones as, you know, a backup. That's pretty much what he'll be. And then they got Darnell Savage from Green Bay, which I think was fine. 3-year, $21 million deal to replace Rayshon Jenkins. So they did upgrade in some positions. They may have slightly downgraded talent, but I think money-wise, they were able to take advantage of what was there for him. So I think it's a B+ for the Jags. Next is the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to give them a B-. Not a ton going on. Their biggest move was keeping Chris Jones, which they signed him to an astronomical deal. Obviously, it's more than he's probably worth, at least in terms of like exact calculations between stats and stuff. But he means so much to the team. They just could not afford to get rid of him. 5-year, $156 million deal. It's a ton, but right now he's probably the best interior defensive lineman, even if he's getting older. So I think it's good they... It was better that they brought him back and overpaid than if they would have lost him and had the money, you know, that would have gone to Chris Jones, but maybe goes to other pieces. I think it's better spent getting Chris Jones in the building. Brought in Irv Smith, backup tight end, whatever, he's fine. Marquise Brown on a 1-year deal I think is very good value. I think he's a good wide receiver, and obviously I think Mahomes elevates a lot of receivers around him, and they needed more receiver help, at least, you know, just more consistent play, so that's good. Did lose, Willie Gay, Mike Edwards at safety is, you know, whatever. Legarius Sneed, they did have to trade. They just didn't have the money to pay him. They got a third-round pick back, which is fine value. Kind of like a B trade for them. But still, obviously, Super Bowl window, you want to have the best players on your team at all times. I'm going to give them a B- because there's also this issue going on with Rashee Rice. Apparently, he was involved in some sort of crash, and the police are trying to get, you know, a hold of him, and he has a lawyer, and his lawyer said he's cooperating. That's the whole full extent of the story right now. Don't need to go into full detail about, you know, anything else. I'm not sure. Some stuff's fake, some stuff's real. It's hard to tell, but just know there's some sort of issue with Rashee Rice now that I'm a little bit worried about, so that's why it's a B-, just because I'm going to include it in this free agency grade, because it's, you know, overarching, looking at the team, it's like, okay, this is how it looks after free agency, but if Rashee Rice is not there, that's a pretty big deal. So maybe he's fine, but B- I think is fine grade for the Chiefs. The Raiders, I'm going to actually go C+. I was not as high on the Raiders offseason as other people were. I think they still had good moves and brought in good players. It's just the money I didn't love, specifically for Christian Wilkins. I think he's a very good player and, you know, obviously is going to improve this team. But 4-year, $110 million, $85 million guaranteed, I just think it's too much. I mean, it's like a B- signing if you count the money and value. It's just an overpay It just is. But I think him and Max Crosby are going to be a great duo. So you're going to hope it leads to wins. It's just the state of their team right now. I think they're kind of in the middle, not really fully. They're not wanting to tank at all, but I don't know if they have enough to really win, especially with the teams in their division. They also brought in Gardner Minshew on a 2-year, $25 million deal. Alexander Mattison is just a backup running back. Gardner Minshew's probably going to compete for the starting job with Aiden O'Connell. I think you could still see what Aiden O'Connell has. You know, he had one solid year, maybe. I mean, it was not solid. It was like okay. Okay, especially for a rookie, so maybe he improves. They kept Andre James at center, which was, he had a very good year last year, so that's good. 3-year, $24 million. And then they lost, like, Josh Jacobs, Amik Robertson, Hunter Renfrow they let go of. A few other guys on the D-line, like Bilal Nichols, Jerry Tillery, didn't do a ton. But their team probably relatively upgraded, but I just don't know the position they're really in right now. And they paid a ton of money out there and still have a good amount of holes. So we'll give them C+. We'll see what the draft is in store for the Raiders. The Chargers, I'm just going to go B-. Obviously, had to get under the cap because they were severely, or had to get back to actually over the cap because they were severely under it by a large amount. So guys like Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Gerald Everett, Austin Eckler, Eric Kendricks, Kenneth Murray, all had to go. Michael Davis included in there. Some of them, they cut and saved some money, like with Mike Williams. Others, they traded, like Keenan Allen. I think, obviously, the value they got back for Keenan Allen, a fourth, not fully what he's worth, but he does have 1 year left on his deal. He's older, so it's a new regime. I understand. They brought in guys like Gus Edwards, 2 years, $6.5 million. Denzel Perryman is like a stopgap. Will Disley at tight end, who could be a backup tight end. Puna Ford on the D-line. Christian Fulton, you know, fine corner. It's fine. It would be lower if you're just looking at players, but they just needed to get back into relative cap space. I do trust Jim Harbaugh. I think he's a very good coach, and I think the biggest thing for Chargers is going to be the draft because they have a very high pick, and I'll be interested to see if they use that pick or if they trade back and who they take if they trade back. So that'll be the biggest thing, is going to be the draft for the Chargers, because we all kind of knew that this was eventually going to come where they had to get rid of a lot of their star players because it was just way too much money and it wasn't leading to fully, you know, it just wasn't leading to wins. Next is the Rams. I'm going to give them a B. It would be a little bit higher, but I think the biggest loss that they had, Aaron Donald, you know, obviously it's not like they lost him to another team, but retirement still does hurt your team if you look at it. Lost Jordan Fuller, Brian Allen at center, but they did bring in, I think, a solid haul. Jonah Jackson they overpaid for, but, you know, still fine. He's young, so he could improve. They got Darius Williams from the Jags, which is a great deal. 3-year, $22.5 million. Very good. Cameron Curl from Washington, 2-year, $8 million. I love him. I love that deal. Tre'Davious White from Buffalo on a 1-year deal. He didn't play a ton, but when he's on the field, I think if he gets a full offseason of being healthy, I think he's very good. So that's a good signing for them. So they really upgraded their secondary a ton. Got a few guys on the O-line in there. Again, draft is, we could see what happens there, but they also were able to re-sign Kevin Dotson at guard to a very good deal, 3-year, $48 million, who was one of the better guards on the market. So pretty good free agency for the Rams. It would be B+, but taking into account the loss of Aaron Donald, they're definitely gonna have to use some draft capital to make up for that, which they're not obviously gonna draft the next Aaron Donald. I mean, maybe, but odds are very low, so that's why it's just gonna be at a B for now. Miami Dolphins are next. We're going to go C+. They were in contention to compete last year and the year before. And now that, you know, them making certain decisions is kind of catching up to them money-wise, kind of like the Bills as well. And they had to cut their losses with a good amount of players like Christian Wilkins, Robert Hunt. Those guys just, they got paid so much money from other teams, they just could not afford to re-sign him. But they also lost guys like Andrew Van Ginkle, who went to Minnesota, Brandon Jones, who went to Denver. We had talked about him. Emmanuel Ogba, Jerome Baker, a few guys that were not amazing that had a lot of money that they kind of had to get rid of, like Xavier Howard. But they also lost a few other guys, Raekwon Davis on the D-line, Deshaun Elliott. So, good amount loss, but I do relatively like some of the guys they brought in. Kendall Fuller out of Washington, I think, is a very good corner, very underrated corner. They got him 2 years, $16.5 million. Jordan Poyer from Buffalo, they just stole and signed to a one-year deal. Shaq Barrett from Tampa, one-year deal I think is solid. Aaron Brewer from Tennessee, a center, played very well. And I think I'm going to move this up to a B-minus because I'm starting to like the, you know, signings they had, but I'll keep it there because some of the linebacker moves they made I didn't love. Like Jordan Brooks from Seattle, I think was an overpay, three-year, $26 million. I think they just tried to pay him because they lost linebackers. Anthony Walker, they signed to a one-year deal, which is fine. Jonnu Smith, tight end, he got a lot of run at Atlanta. Obviously, the memes of, you know, the Falcons not actually using their talented players and just using them as, like, distraction so they can give it to Jonnu Smith, but he's fine, you know, two-year, 8.4, probably too much, but they did lose, and they need a tight end, so might as well get him in the building. So I'll move it up to a B-minus for the Dolphins, but no more than that. Minnesota Vikings, I'm going to give them an A-minus. I think they actually had a pretty good offseason for a team that's rebuilding. Obviously, their biggest loss was Kirk, but I think with the state of their team, I think it was good that they moved on. I think they've kind of run the mill with Kirk, and unfortunately, the last year was injured. Maybe they could have done more if he was healthy, but I think it's good that they didn't pay the money to re-sign him. And then with that, they also got rid of a few other guys, like Danielle Hunter, Alexander Madison, who was horrible for them, and they definitely needed to upgrade that, but Marcus Davenport, Jordan Hicks, a lot of older guys. And then the guys they brought in, I think were good, and they were younger. Jonathan Grenard, defensive end from Houston, four-year, $76 million. He's young, so you're kind of banking on that. Blake Cashman, like we also said, from Houston, three-year, $25 million. Andrew Van Ginkle from Miami, two-year, $20 million. I really like that deal. Aaron Jones, they get only on one-year deal. I know he's a little bit older, but I think that's a huge upgrade at running back. And then you get a few other guys on the D-line that are just going to be stopgaps. Jerry Tillery, Jahad Ward, Jonah Williams, all defensive linemen that are fine. Shaquille Griffin they got, who's been injured at corner, but still fine. Sam Darnold they signed to probably be at least their starter maybe week one, but I think the Vikings are definitely a team that are in the market for a quarterback. Rumors maybe a trade-up, J.J. McCarthy, kind of what I'm thinking right now, but we'll see what that is come draft time. But for the free agents specifically, I think it's an A-. I think they had a good free agency. New England Patriots are next. I'm going to give them a C. They did re-sign a lot of players, which the money wasn't necessarily bad. They re-signed Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, guard Michael Onwenu, edge Anfernee Jennings. On the outside linebacker, they got Josh Uche, Jalen Reagor. So nothing bad or overpays for any of these guys. And they brought in a few other guys. Antonio Gibson, who's fine. Sione Takitaki, solid. Jacoby Brissett, I do like at quarterback. He's not going to move the needle for this team, but it's good. Austin Hooper, KJ Osborne. It's just nothing crazy, you know? They did move on from some other guys that kind of makes it, none of them were crazy either, so that's why it's kind of like nothing really moves the needle. Mac Wilson, they lost. Mac Jones, they obviously traded, which they didn't get a ton back, which just sucks. Like, a guy who was a Pro Bowler, his rookie year, just team around him diminishes. I do think he had some issues with his personality, but he looks way happier in Jacksonville right now, so maybe that's best for him. And then a few other guys that just sucked that they got rid of, like J.C. Jackson, Adrian Phillips, Lawrence Guy. Lost Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki, Trenton Brown, Jalen Mills. They just didn't really move up. And they re-signed a lot of guys that obviously didn't, like, they're fine, but didn't contribute to wins a ton. So this is the team I'm a little bit worried about. We'll go over and draft stuff, but that I'm a little bit worried about for a rookie coming to, because it's, you know, it's a new head coach. We have no idea, but defensive-minded, new head coach. Team doesn't look great. Weapons around him aren't great. I'd be lying if it said it worried me a bit, but free agency doesn't really move the needle for me. I'm going to give them a C. New Orleans Saints, the signings, just looking at the signings, I think you could give them like a B+. They added Willie Gay for cheap. Cedric Wilson is fine. Chase Young, they got on a one-year deal. We'll see what he can do. I think he's very talented. They kept Tyrann Mathieu and DeMario Davis on good deals, both two-year deals under $18 million. I think DeMario Davis is 17 and Tyrann Mathieu's 14. And they didn't lose a ton of crazy guys. Zach Bond, at outside linebacker, Lonnie Johnson at corner, Jameis Winston, obviously, and then Malcolm Roach at defensive end, and Marcus May at safety. Nothing crazy, but the direction they're going in is just, it's directionless. Like, it's, I don't like it. They are re-signing these older players. They're clearly still trying to win. I think this is Dennis Allen's last year here, who's the head coach, because I don't see any major improvements with this team. I think they should have, you know, just done a restart, take this year, restart, get a franchise quarterback in there. But maybe they can't, obviously, because of the Derek Carr move, which I didn't like last year either. So kind of saw this coming. Signings aren't bad, but the state of their team, it just doesn't really make sense, or I don't see a lot of success with it. So I'm going to give them a C+. New York Giants, they're going to get a B-. They obviously lost Saquon Barkley, which was a big deal, but they chose not to pay him. And I think, you know, it was smart, relatively speaking, because they needed to focus on more valuable positions. And, you know, this regime didn't draft Saquon. So while, yes, they probably should have drafted a quarterback instead of Saquon. And I don't think running back, just the value for running back is just not there with the money. He was definitely clearly the best player. And, you know, it does suck to lose him, but he wasn't really helping you move the needle and winning a ton of games. Because all the focus was on him. So maybe it's better to spread the team around and try and help out your next quarterback, which maybe it's Daniel Jones, at least for 1 year, but I think it won't be him in the future. But they got guys like John Runyon, Devin Singletary for less money, Brian Burns, obviously the trade. They ended up giving him a $150 million deal with 5 years. Traded a second-round pick. A lot of capital into Brian Burns. That's why I'm not insanely crazy about it, but I do think it's still like a B, you know, if you were to just grade that whole move in general. Jalen Mills, Isaiah McKenzie, Jermaine Elamunor from Las Vegas at tackle was a solid deal. A lot of solid stuff. They didn't lose anyone crazy besides Saquon. I mean, Xavier McKinney they did lose. A'shaun Robinson, but all that's replaceable. And I think Saquon, obviously, his talent's not replaceable, but again, I think it's they chose to move on, and that's fine. But overall, they get a B-, nothing crazy. Jets, I'm going to give them a B. Brought in a few older guys, but obviously they need to because they need to win. Mike Williams, Tyron Smith, and Morgan Moses on the O-line. None of them to really crazy overpays or trades. Like Morgan Moses was a trade. They give up a sixth-round pick. Tyron Smith, they signed to a one-year $6.5 million, both good. Javon Kinlaw taking a shot at the D-line, why not? And then they got John Simpson on the offensive line, Isaiah Oliver at corner, Tyrod Taylor is a backup quarterback. They did lose a few guys like Bryce Huff, that kind of sucked, he's very talented. Jordan Whitehead at safety is solid, but nothing really crazy. I think they still, again, have a very high pick, which is good. Maybe they could end up getting, like, you know, another offensive lineman or a Brock Bowers at tight end. That's very possible, but free agency, we'll give him a B. Eagles, I'm going to go B+. I do like the Bryce Huff signing. We just talked about him. He was from the Jets. 3-year, $51 million deal. They also ended up getting Saquon, who we just recently talked about. 3-year, $38 million deal. A little bit more than what you would like, but still solid. And I think he's going to get used and just probably skyrocket to, like, people view him as like a top three running back in this Eagles running system. So that's good for him. Zach Bond, outside linebacker they got, Devontae Parker, Matt Hennessy at center, CJ Gardner-Johnson they brought in, Devin White at linebacker, which I think people kind of overrated that deal. I think he's been very good playing alongside veteran guys, and now he's kind of the main linebacker in Philadelphia, and we'll see how that works, but there's a reason they only gave him a one-year deal. Paris Campbell, wide receiver, and then they also got Kenny Pickett. They ended up, you know, like, swapping third and fourth round picks. I think basically they get Kenny Pickett and give up a third, but get a fourth back and like 2/7. So it's kind of weird. Very interesting situation with Pittsburgh and what they gave up. But, you know, for Eagles, hey, why not? I think Pickett's a relative starting caliber guy. And as a backup, might as well take it. You don't really have to give up a ton. They did also re-sign Brandon Graham and Landon Dickerson. Landon Dickerson, the biggest one on the O-line. Gave him a huge deal, though. $84 million for 4 years. It's a bit much. Kind of like a B-minus signing, but still solid with Brandon Graham, especially alongside him. And then they obviously did lose Jason Kelce, which is big, to retirement. Lost DeAndre Swift and Kevin Byard, but I think both of them got overpaid wherever they went. So not bad. Pretty solid. I'd give them a B plus. Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm going to give them an A minus. Russell Wilson, they ended up signing, but they only have to pay him $2 million. And if it works, hey, awesome, we got a cheap quarterback. If it doesn't, oh well, you just cut him. You don't have to pay anything. High upside, and boom, if he doesn't work, you got Justin Fields right behind him, which I'm not the biggest fan of Justin Fields, at least viewing, hey, should we have Justin Fields or and like build around him and trade the first overall pick, or should we take the first overall pick and get rid of Fields? Yeah, one of those is clearly the obvious option. But giving up a sixth round pick for Justin Fields, I think is pretty good value. And if Russ doesn't work out, boom, you got Fields in there who could potentially be better in the Steelers offense. They also signed Patrick Queen from Baltimore, so they take away from a division rival, give him the spotlight in Pittsburgh, three-year, $41 million, which is pretty good. Cordell Patterson they signed, and they didn't lose anything really crazy. Mitch Trubisky is backup quarterback, whatever. Mason Cole at center was kind of like fine. They'll probably draft a center or something. Allen Robinson at receiver didn't do anything. Patrick Peterson is past his prime. Keanu Neal is like a whatever safety. And then Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph also leaves. But Kenny Pickett, it does suck to trade him and get like nothing back for a first-round quarterback that you took. And I think maybe he could have one more year, but I prefer their quarterback situation now than what it was with Kenny Pickett. So we'll give the Steelers a solid A-. Next is the San Francisco 49ers, and I didn't really love it. I gave them a C+. They got Leonard Floyd as a pass rusher from Buffalo, two-year, $20 million. It's kind of a lot. Yuter Gross-Matos from Carolina is young. He kind of flashed, but two-year, $18 million. They're kind of taking a chance. Malik Collins, they ended up trading for, which is solid on the defensive interior. Lost Javon Kinlaw, who was a first-round pick they took. Didn't work out. Sam Darnold, obviously, backup quarterback. Cleveland Farrell, who they had as like a whatever defensive end. Isaiah Oliver at corner. Not a ton changed, but they didn't bring in a ton. So maybe they make another trade or something. But the Ayuk trade is still looming over them. Ayuk is currently still on the roster, but he might end up being traded. So that'll probably be the biggest thing they do. And I do obviously have their first-round pick and a few other picks. So I think if they really want to improve, they're going to have to hit on those and ideally keep Ayuk. But if they trade him, hopefully get, you know, everything worth and more for Ayuk. So at right now, we'll give the Niners a C+. Seattle Seahawks, they're also going to get a C+. They lost a good amount of people. They did. Devin Bush at linebacker is like whatever, but Bobby Wagner at linebacker, it's like, he's very good and older, but I think Seattle's probably trying to win after not making the playoffs, so that kind of sucks. But they also lost Jordan Brooks, so lost a ton of linebackers. Lost Damian Lewis at guard, Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams, so you need new safeties. Tight end, they lost Will Disley. They did bring back guys like Leonard Williams and Noah Fant and Tyler Lockett. I think Tyler Lockett's the best one, two-year, $30 million deal, the best value. They re-signed Leonard Williams to a pretty massive deal, $65 million for 3 years, which is a lot. I know they want to win right now, so it makes sense, but it's a lot of money for him. And then Noah Fant, a tight end, is fine, two-year, $21 million. Traded for Sam Howell to be a backup. I really like Sam Howell as a backup. I think that's very good value. They have Rayshon Jenkins from Jacksonville, which is fine. Nick Harris, backup center, it's whatever. But they lost a good amount and didn't really recoup that value. So it kind of sucks, but they're going to have to hope their young guys really take a step up. But free agency will give them a C+. Tampa Bay Buccaneers didn't do a ton. Mostly was focused on re-signing guys. Like Mike Evans, they were able to bring back, which is good for them. Two-year, $41 million deal. Levante David and Chase Edmonds, they brought back. Baker Mayfield was the biggest one. He got a three-year, $100 million deal. I think Baker Mayfield has like a cycle where he starts off, looks promising, then plays worse, and then, you know, ends up everyone overlooking him and then plays actually pretty solid and then gets money and it's like a cycle. So I do think he's solid, but I'm still relatively worried about if he's really going to fully live up to this deal because I think obviously he had a ton going right for him last year and he played way better than I expected. Totally. Won a playoff game. That's awesome. I don't know if him being there, if they're going to just take another step up next year, you know, because they do still have a lot of needs, as weird as it sounds. Like, O-line is not looking amazing, to be honest, for them. But, well, I don't think he'll live up to the money, but it's not a big overpay. It's like a B. And then they did lose Carlton Davis, who they traded. They got a third-round pick, which is fine. And then Shaq Barrett, they ended up losing, so that's pass-rushing help that they need. In the draft, they're going to have a ton of different directions they could go. They did sign Jordan Whitehead at safety, so that's solid from the Jets. He was the guy that had three picks in one game for them against Josh Allen. But Tampa Bay, we'll give them a B. And then we got two more. Tennessee Titans, I'm going to give them a B+. They made a ton of interesting moves. It was kind of a shocking offseason for Tennessee with the new regime in there. Got Lloyd Cushenberry, a center from Denver, 4-year, 50 mil. Jadobi Awuzie from Cincinnati, 3-year, 36 mil. Tony Pollard was the big one. I didn't even mention, or no, I think I did mention him leaving Dallas, but he ended up going to the Titans, which is kind of shocking. And he got 3-year, 24 mil. He was disappointing last year. I do still like him. It's, again, probably too much money, but he's very good. And I think a lot of these running backs got paid a ton because this running back class coming in doesn't have any star names. I do think there are still going to be maybe some good players down the board. And a lot of these teams that didn't choose to pay high caliber running backs, if they hit on one of these lower round running backs in the draft, I think they're going to be super happy. But for the Titans, after losing Derrick Henry, hey, Tony Pollard, you want to use the running game? He's solid. He's a good running back. I like it. Kenneth Murray, the Chargers linebacker, 2-year, 15 mil. He's been not amazing. I don't think he earned this deal at all. Calvin Ridley, they signed, who's a talented player, but very big overpay. 4-year, 92 mil, 50 million guaranteed. So they had some ups and downs. But then they did trade for Legarius Sneed. They gave up a third-round pick, paid him right after, and I think he's a good corner. So I think that's a solid move. So kind of up and down. Obviously, the biggest things they lost, Derrick Henry, Sean Murphy Bunting, Azeez Al-Shaair, Denico Autry, Aaron Brewer at center. I think, again, up and down for each thing, but I think with them spending a ton, I think it's good that they are surrounding their young quarterback, because I think Will Levis showed some promise, and he doesn't have a rookie fifth-year option because he wasn't a first-round pick. So ideally, you'd want to help him right now. So I'm going to give him a B+. And then the final one, the Washington Commanders, they are also going to have one of the best grades, and that is an A. Had a ton of money, and they spent it well. And I think that's very good because they just needed a total overhaul, and they're going to have a new quarterback coming in. And I'm liking these teams that are just completely changing their team and making it better for a rookie. They don't have to just be bad along with the rookie quarterback. Like, have the best possible team that a rookie could come into. I think that's a very good strategy. Got Frankie Louvu, 3-year, 36 mil. Love it. Tyler Biadasz, center, 3-year, 30 mil. Very good. Dorrance Armstrong from Dallas as well. 3-year, 24 mil, which is good. Austin Eckler from the Chargers, 2-year, 8.5 mil. He's looked at better than he actually is just because of his fantasy numbers, but still a very good receiving option in the backfield. They got Mariota as a backup quarterback, Cleveland Farrell and Zach Ertz, older guys, but Cleveland Farrell at defensive end, you know, that's fine. Same with Dante Fowler. They got Jeremy Chinn from Carolina, who I really like at safety, kind of hybrid safety. They got Bobby Wagner, you know, hey, we want to win right now. Dan Quinn brings back his guy, Bobby Wagner. So, you know, pretty solid. A lot of just added pieces that are just good players, and none of them were major overpays. Maybe guard Nick Allegretti from Kansas City, who I forgot to mention, 3-year, 16 mil. Not amazing, but still, it's not bad. They lost Antonio Gibson, Charles Leno at tackle, who was not amazing. And he was solid, actually. Want to respect him a little bit. He was good. So it's a little bit of a downgrade there. But they could maybe address it later on in the draft. And then Jacoby Brissett, Sam Howell, they moved on, obviously, at quarterback. Curtis Samuel, they lost. But maybe they could look to get another weapon in the draft or offensive lineman, but they really are going to help whatever rookie comes in there, whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels, and they'll have a pretty solid team around them. So they're going to get an A. And that is my free agency rankings for each team. So that is going to be the end of the episode. I hope you enjoy the final four with obviously the, I think the, both games could be good, But if they're not, the final game is going to be probably very good. Definitely, I'm going to be watching Purdue and NC State, which, by the way, I just saw this thing before we end the episode of NFL teams like having legit interest in DJ Burns, which would be one of the most insane stories I've ever seen in my life. DJ Burns doing all this stuff and then boom, going to the NFL. Oh my God, I would love that. Maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe it's just a complete, you know, fallacy, but would that be insane? Well, that'll be something I'll leave you the episode with. Think about just DJ Burns as an offensive tackle or defensive lineman with, you know, how skilled he is. And he's relatively shifty, especially because he plays basketball. Like, oh my God, that'd be so crazy. But that's where we're going to end the episode off. So, of course, stay smart, stay sharp, and I will see you guys later. Peace.